This is the Jeff Horowitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All right, Representative Mark Finchem declared for Secretary of State. We got him today, plus Bruce Sidlinger, your comments, and a bunch of news items. The Jeff Horowitz Show starts now. I do want to say this, and I want to tag off what I was talking about yesterday. The stimulus packages, I'm now seeing more and more talk from members of Congress. Even Senator Bernie Sanders, can you imagine that he is, chairman of the banking or the finance, let me get this right, committee chair on budget, Senator Bernie Sanders. Well, they're all calling for another stimulus check, or at least a lot of folks. It's getting, the echo is getting larger and larger, more and more people saying we need more stimulus. Representative Ilhan Omar saying $2,000 per month to carry people through the pandemic, and they've also added that they should keep this going until the economy recovers, until its past point. What if that never happens, or what if it takes years? So I don't know where all of this ends, but we'll talk about it a lot today. We have Bruce Sidlinger coming up, businessman, investor, educator. Plus, I got a bunch of your comments. You can comment, and I got Representative Mark Finchem here first off in just a second. Plus, your comments, you want to comment? Go ahead and send an email, talkwithjeff@icloud.com, talkwithjeff@icloud.com, plus the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. And a reminder, tomorrow's open line Wednesday, 2 full hours of your live listener comments. So we're going to talk with you, and I look forward to that day every week. Rob Wilson is a Second Amendment expert and firearms trainer and much more. He's going to be joining me, so please participate in open line Wednesday tomorrow. All right. Let's get right to it. The 2022 election is heating up. It started heating up right after the last election. This is going to be a good one. There's going to be a lot of people vying for governor, secretary of state, and one other position as well. Congress, CD1 is going to be a big one. I see people lining up for Ann Kirkpatrick's seat as well down in southern Arizona, which is good. But Representative Mark Finchem, who was on the program last week, he's been on the election issues in a big way. He wants to reform the election process in Arizona, make sure we have trustworthy elections, I guess you'd say. And he's running for the position that I guess really oversees this. Representative Mark Finchem, welcome back to the program. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I guess it's a good fit for what you've been pushing for, Representative, which is election reform. A lot of your bills making their way through the process at the legislature right now. Is that, I mean,
yeah.
So Secretary of State, you declared, you're in.
I'm in, all in. So, it's not the sexiest job in the world, as some would say, but it is probably one of the most important jobs in state government. And the reason that it's so important is the Secretary of State often is the one to secure the election, is the one who, quite frankly, is charged with making sure that the process is free and fair, and that if there are actions that need to be taken that the legislature directs, that those actions are implemented appropriately to the point where you're doing what the legislature has said they want done. Because at the end of the day, the legislature is the people. That's the policymaking arena. It's not the Secretary of State or the governor or some. The Secretary of State needs to faithfully execute the laws that the legislature puts down.
Well, Representative, the Secretary of State position is one of the big issues, is the election, overseeing the state's elections. But it's also, Secretary of State's also second in line to the governorship, I believe. We don't have a lieutenant governor, although I thought there were bills, there was proposals to do this. That must have failed, huh?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the status of that is. It changes from day to day. Yeah. There is a bill. In fact, there's been a bill for the last, I think, 3 sessions to create a lieutenant governor position.
Yeah.
That's not why I'm in this. It's possible that that bill could still pass. I don't know if we have enough votes to get it through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It probably would end up being a strict party line vote, which that's really no way to, our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, this this benefits everybody. I have mixed feelings about Lieutenant Governor. Mm-hmm. I think it's another post that, okay, the reason this conversation is going on right now is we have a Republican governor and a Democrat Secretary of State. And there are a lot of people that would like to see, I mean, it's a strong argument to say that Secretary of State should be from the same party as the governor so that you have a continuity of public policy that is execution.
Okay.
Because, again, they don't make policy, they just execute it. But I don't know that that's a strong enough argument. It's certainly something that I think that the people should weigh in on, because after all, these are the top leaders in government in our state.
Yeah. So
send it out. I'm not really sure where that's going to land.
Yeah. Maybe send that out to the voters. Okay. But the Secretary of State position, obviously, one of the many things that it does is oversees the state's elections. And like you mentioned, the current Secretary of State is a Democrat. She won, Hobbs won in the last election in, where are we at now, 18. And there was, before that, it was a Republican Secretary of State. Actually, Republicans controlled all the top offices before that election.
Right.
So this is going to be a heated election. There's been speculation, of course, that Hobbs is running for governor on the Democrat side. We'll see, I guess, how everything pans out. So what, you're working on election integrity bills. I guess my question is, what would you have done different post-election, this past election, that you're, that Secretary Hobbs did?
Well, first of all, you know, let's go back and just take a brief visit to that. George Soros and the progressive left, I mean, the hard left, spent a lot of money to get her elected. I would not have engaged in what is called friendly lawsuits, where Perkins Coie comes in and says, we're going to sue you to make sure that we have an extended voter registration period. Oh, please don't sue me. Can we somehow come to an agreement? So that's called a consent decree.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually got some legislation right now that is making its way through that would not permit consent decrees by agency offices without the approval of the legislature, especially when they have a price tag attached to them. So that's one thing. I would have been much more on top of the voting machine counting thing. These are not tabulation machines. These are calculation machines. And the difference between the two is one counts votes, the other one does math to reallocate votes. Well, that's the same stuff that's being used in Maricopa County. So, interestingly enough, the state of Texas prohibited the use of that equipment because of all of the security vulnerabilities. So that's one thing. And I've advocated for quite some time a more robust program to clean up the voter rolls to make sure that people who have moved don't have the opportunity to vote in Arizona anymore. The people that have deceased up to the day before the election, if they deceased after their ballot was mailed in, that's one thing. But if they deceased beforehand, that's problematic. So those are some of the things that are making their way through.
Okay.
One of the other things that I'm asking for is sweeping changes in the paper that is used. Now, some people would say, well, what difference does that mean? The paper that we currently use does not have a watermark, does not have any security features on it other than timing marks that go through the tabulation equipment. If we were to add fraud countermeasures in the way of watermark, hologram, both overt and covert countermeasures to make sure that those ballots are real, legitimate ballots, that would improve ballot security and chain of custody because you'd be able to count every single sheet of paper that's used for making ballots. But moreover, you know, there's been an accusation, actually a couple of accusations in Arizona, that counterfeit ballots somehow made their way into the system. Well, without a hand count and inspection, nobody can say without reservation that that didn't happen. And right now with voter opinion at an all-time low about the security of our elections process, I think it's extremely important that we do everything we can to restore the confidence of the voters in their consent to be governed.
Well,
that means locking down the vote.
Let me ask you this, Representative Fincham, stepping back just a little bit, because there's been lots of accusations, obviously, with the Dominion software, and Dominion's on quite a tear now as far as filing lawsuits against people who have been talking about their software and their machines. Has there been anything in Arizona that ever made it into court? What would you do? I mean, would you eliminate the use of the Dominion software? Would you change how it's done? Because, like I said, things are flying left and right on this company, and they're out there suing left and right at this point.
Yeah, that's a great question. What Dominion did is they actually opened the door to discovery, which is a legal process. When you go to sue somebody, you can't just sue them and say, I'm going to sue you. You have to give your opposition the opportunity to see what you have. And, I mean, that is very broad. So anything that they had in the way of emails, programming, that is a significant misstep for Dominion. And, you know, the fact that they roll in with a big number, we're going to sue you for $1 billion. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. At the end of the day, I want to see what it is that you did, the makeup of your equipment. I mean, if you go back and take a look at a movie called Kill Chain, I think
never
like
heard of
2014.
One. Kill Chain.
Kill Chain. Look for the movie Kill Chain on YouTube.
Okay.
That's Dominion equipment that they are using to process basically a fake election, just to show how vulnerable this equipment is, how easy it is for it to be hacked, and how easy it is for manipulation of the vote count. Anybody who watches that movie, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, maybe not so much communist, anybody who watches that movie is going to be horrified to see exactly what can happen with that equipment. And it's enough to make a lot of people start asking the question, wouldn't it be cheaper and more efficient to just have a hand tabulation? You hire people for a couple of days. You have Republicans and Democrats sitting next to each other agreeing, this is a vote for this person, this is a vote for that person, and you move on to the next ballot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that are calling for paper ballots and hand counting. Now, am I a fan of that? I don't know yet. It depends on what the forensic audit shows.
Well, there's a paper trail at least. And I don't know if where I voted, a lot of people don't go in, but they use the little marker and they send it in. Are you saying do that type of paper vote still where you fill in the circle?
Yeah.
Okay.
You would still fill in the bubble.
Okay.
And you would still have somebody look at it. See, before electronics came in, we actually had mechanical counting. You might remember the hanging chad.
Yeah, push the thing
okay,
in. Okay,
that was actually a mechanical punch card that was counted. That was not an electronic or what they call OCR. That wasn't a scan. It was an actual physical count of a mark that had been created on the ballot card. So I think at this point, we really need to focus on what does the forensic audit say? What's the work product that we get out of that? And what are the fraud vectors, the things that happened that we can do something about? And that's the guts, if you will, of public policy. What we don't want to do is just make changes willy-nilly to the electoral process that aren't going to have a meaningful impact on, as you said, trustworthy elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that is actually the watchword of what's going on. Because people at this point are not certain that their vote actually counted or that it was counted.
Yeah, they should be. Well, okay, Representative Fincham, last point here. Can you, if you get elected to Secretary of State, which, folks, if you're just joining us, Representative Mark Fincham declared he's running for Secretary of State, would you have the authority to decide as Secretary of State, I'm using Dominion software, or I'm using the old hanging chad type thing, the punch things, or the fill-in-the-bubble thing, or whatever the case may be, or is that a per-county decision? do you have that power as Secretary of State to standardize in whatever form you feel like or you think is best?
Another good question, Jeff. So the Secretary of State is there not to be a dictator. Counties have latitude on how they are going to manage their election. And frankly, I would not want to interfere with that, except to say there are certain fraud countermeasures that you're going to have to implement. Now, that's part of the election procedure manual. But I think, moreover, the thing that makes our elections as secure as they are is you can't commit fraud in the same way in every place. I mean, you've got to do it in, we have over 3,000 counties in the United States. Think about the level of fraud that has to occur there. Now, what we believe has happened, and I think the evidence is going to show that, is the people that wanted to perpetrate this chose the biggest target. Big target, you're going to have possibly lesser fraud security countermeasures in place, less process in place, and your focus is on getting ballots counted quickly. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the Secretary of State is sure that process is followed, that where there are vulnerabilities, that those vulnerabilities are called out. And if that means that the legislature needs to act to prohibit the use of certain things, then the Secretary of State needs to work with the legislature to see to it that those public policy objectives are brought to the debate table. And we go through that and we make sure that we do have free and fair elections. Now, if people would like to sign my nominating petition, that is out there now. They can visit AZSOS and look for the equal button. You can actually sign petitions online now.
Yeah.
And I would appreciate their support, your listeners' support. They can sign my petition online, and it's quick, it's easy, and it's secure.
All right. Well, best wishes to you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again as the legislative session continues and then ultimately winds down here soon and the race heats up for Secretary of State. And I want to see everything explored as far as the people who said their ballots weren't counted or they felt like their vote didn't count. You know, we've gotten to this point in the country where you're guilty till proven innocent. So for those who feel like the election didn't count for them, they need to be vetted out. And on the opposite side, Representative Fincham, what's the name of the software again? No, just spaced my mind.
Dominion.
That's now open, like you said. And people who say Dominion did things wrong, well, we got to go through that process, right? And sort it all out.
Right.
And make sure
we
that we have fair elections. Did they do any wrong? Did they not do any wrong? It needs to be brought out.
That's the power of the forensic audit, by the way. We will be able to say you either did or didn't do something. And I want, if they didn't do something, I want them to be exonerated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But if they did do something, I want the people to know what happened. You know, voter nullification is what we're talking about. It's not voter suppression, which, by the way, voter nullification is a form of voter suppression. It's where your vote is nullified by somebody else's vote that wasn't entitled to vote, or that it was electronically adjudicated, air quotes, meaning that your vote was basically cast off, that it didn't count. And that's one of the things that we need to safeguard against.
Absolutely. All right. Representative Fincham, good to hear from you again, and best wishes to you.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a great day.
All right, you as well. All right, folks. Hey, you know, I forgot to do this yesterday. And I am so sorry to my friends at Finlay Toyota, but we did such a good job on Friday with the daily trivia question. I had Olivia and Isabel's cousins in, and we did that was a great segment about Jaguars and other things. Talk with Jeff.com. You can get that there. But I have the daily trivia question here from our friends at Finlay Toyota Flagstaff. This is going on through the end of this week. You listen every day around this time, but definitely during the show because, you know, I'm pretty unpredictable. We start the show and everything goes out the window as far as our schedule. Daily trivia question. Submit the answer. I'm going to read you the question here in just a second on the Big Talker Facebook page. Look up 97.1 Big Talker, 97.1 Big Talker on Facebook. One winner will be chosen from all the correct answers each day to receive a pair of one-day passes to the Arizona Snowball. Good for the rest of the 2021 ski season, which is a phenomenal ski season. No purchase necessary, must be 18 years or older to win. All right, here's the question. How many SUVs does Toyota currently manufacture? Go to Big Talker Facebook page, 97.1 Big Talker Facebook page. Enter your answer there. We'll choose a winner. How many SUVs does Toyota currently manufacture? All right, a lot more to come, including some news items, your comments, plus businessman, investor, educator, Bruce Sidlinger. Hang tight. Don't go anywhere. Back in a minute. Your house needs Gutter Helmet. Installing over your existing gutters allows for water to flow freely. This is Jeff Orvitz for Gutter Helmet. For over 40 years, Gutter Helmet has been the proven solution to protect homeowners from dangerous ladders. Let Gutter Helmet protect you today and for years to come with their triple lifetime warranty. Seniors, military, and first responders get the biggest discounts. For a limited time, you can save up to 30%. Call Gutter Helmet today at 928-318-6555.
You're listening to The Jeff Orvitz Show. Be part of the program by calling 877-971-3971.
We still have Bruce Sidlinger coming up, businessman, investor, entrepreneur. We've got a lot to talk about with him. I want to get to some of your comments, though. You can email your comments, talkwithjeff@icloud.com, talkwithjeff@icloud.com. And don't forget about the Just Wireless listener line. Great group of folks there. Two locations in Flagstaff. Get your smartphone, your cell phone, your tablet, even your gaming console repaired. If you're coming in anywhere, kind of the north of Flagstaff, east of Flagstaff, anywhere on that east side, got their easy to find location across from the Flagstaff Mall with the drive through. You can just drop your device off at the drive through right across from the mall there, Just Wireless. And then of course their west side location by Cold Stone Creamery in that shopping center right there on the very west end of Milton Avenue. Just Wireless, 877-971-3971. That's the comment line. I'd love to hear from you. Leave your comments today, 877-971-3971. Tomorrow's open line Wednesday. Two full hours of your live listener comments. Rob Wilson from Timberline Firearms and Training will take your questions on any topic and comments and so on and so forth. Second Amendment's a big issue, though, and some of these gun control bills would love to talk about. Okay, let's do some emails. talkwithjeff@icloud.com. This is from, Nicola. After a lovely, full-faced afternoon of swimming, smiling, and playing at FAC, it's an athletic club in town, with my youngest last week, I noticed that the mayor had dug his heels in hard on the mask thing, which I thought was a non-issue after the governor's very short, sweet, and clear executive order, and felt the nagging suspicion that we might not be out of the woods just yet. If he didn't have a leg to stand on, he would be doing damage mitigation, offering incentives to businesses, I think she's referring to the mayor, Flagstaff, who maintained the mandate privately, etc. So I started doing a little research. Arizona is a home rule state for any town with a population greater than 3,500. I'd love to have somebody with legal expertise interpret that, although I suppose that's what Tucson and Flagstaff are doing right now. In my reading, unfortunately, it looks like he is completely within his right to maintain the mask mandate. The idea of home rule is a good old conservative principle that keeps big government out of local affairs, but it may just be the nail in the coffin here. Again, Nicola from Flagstaff, there's another part to this email, but let me address this first issue. First of all, as you know, if you missed the show, Governor Ducey basically rescinded all of the restrictions statewide for COVID, with the exception of masks on public transportation in schools and a few things like that. Generally speaking, the big issue at hand was that the governor took away the ability of cities and towns and counties to have a mask mandate. And two cities in particular, the mayor of Tucson, the mayor of Tucson, Romero, she said that I'm not going to follow this. I am going to maintain the mask mandate, and the governor can't do anything about it. And she even referred to her legal department, the city attorney or whatever, that said that we're well within our right. The city of Flagstaff is having a council meeting tonight. Might even be happening right now, but they're having a meeting tonight to discuss the mask mandate, I believe. And the mayor's already said, though, that he is going to maintain the mask mandate, Mayor Paul Deasy, regardless of what the governor said. He put that on Facebook. I was talking to him by text last week, even by phone, actually. And we're supposed to get him on this week. We shall see. But basically, those two cities are saying we're still going to do it. Now, Nicola is referring to home rule. And yeah, I'm not an absolute expert on this. I'm familiar with the topic. Let me see if I can bring in Jerry Neighbors on this, former mayor of Flagstaff. But how it is yeah, you have the right to do certain things as a community, as a city, as a town, to do local control. Some examples of this, and I'm not sure, Nicola, that this fits within the scope of that, but I think this will have to be litigated, and we're going to find out. So in the meantime, the mayor claims that you still have a mask mandate in Flagstaff and in Tucson. But home rule went into serious litigation in Flagstaff during the minimum wage issue. You remember this? And I believe the voting issue as well. Back when there's this whole argument about cities and towns should be able to set their own election date, their own time of year. It used to be that a place like Flagstaff, I think the elections were in May. And then this legislature said, we're going to standardize everything. Everybody has to move to November. Well, eventually that got litigated because certain cities said, no, we don't want to do elections when you tell us. We're going to do it when we want to do it. And then cities were allowed to set their own election. But most cities had already gone to November, so that's where they're at. Flagstaff, for example, is now in November. Phoenix, I believe, maybe they are as well. I'm not sure. But anyway, it was decided that the cities and towns had the right to set their own election date. It was also decided during the minimum wage issue, because that battle came into play that, oh, the state's going to set the minimum wage and that's what it's going to be. Well, here comes Flagstaff, and Flagstaff has this petition or initiative to set the minimum wage to 15. Well, it wins. And then there's this whole issue about is that legal? Can the cities do that? And it was determined that yes, it went through a whole court process, if memory serves me right. And yes, cities can set in Arizona their own minimum wage. So those are two big examples of that home rule type of thing. But it's not for everything. And I think that's where we're going to have to see if a mandate like this can be done by the city, and in particular by an individual mayor, because in a lot of cases, this wasn't just the whole council that did this. Think of Cottonwood. Cottonwood Mayor Tim Alinsky, he called the meeting, this was many months back, for a mask mandate, and he asked his colleagues on council to vote, and the council voted no, and he just turned around and said, well, I don't care. We're going to have a mask mandate. It was pretty bad because he should have been prepared for the answer of no, or just don't call the meeting and do the mandate. So anyway, mayors have tremendous power, but then cities and towns do have a certain amount of authority to govern their own affairs, especially charter cities, I believe, which Flagstaff is one. But I'm not sure on this issue. We're going to have to wait and see. But for now, the mask mandate stands. But is it enforceable? I don't know. Another part of your question here, on a side note, politically, she says it was political suicide as far as doing this. Had he simply allowed businesses to choose, and I think you're referring to the mayor once again, he could have laid the blame on Deasy, incentivized businesses who kept the mandate, and allowed the rabid maskers to keep fighting the cause. However, by standing against the governor and against fully half of the population who wants to be free to at least choose the places that we patronize, he's villainizing himself, and it's going to be an uphill battle for the rest of his term. And that's from Nicola as well. I'm sorry, I butchered your name. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case for the mayor of Flagstaff, Mayor Paul Deasy, in a city like Flagstaff. I think the vast majority want the mask mandates, and they like these kind of big government type of things. So I don't know if your assessment's right. I mean, if you look at the makeup of the Flagstaff City Council, it's like if you're left or lefter. So we shall see. We shall see what happens. By the way, this is from Jerry Neighbors. No mayor in Flagstaff's history that he could find in his research, he mentioned this a long time ago on the show, has ever lost their bid for re-election for that second term. So that's never happened. So anyway, we will try to get the Mayor Flagstaff on to talk about this a little more. Mayor Paul Deasy, I love your comments. We'll get to some more here as the program progresses. We also have businessman, investor, educator Bruce Siblinger. We got a bunch of topics we're going to hit on. Your comments, talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com, plus the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. Chime in anytime. Don't go anywhere. More to come. Back in a minute. All right, before we get back to the program, I want you to do me a favor, and I actually have a new feature on the website, talkwithjeff.com. You can go check it out, talkwithjeff.com. Let me get back to it here myself. And there's a new button up there on the top links, how to listen. Click on how to listen after you go to talkwithjeff.com. And, of course, we've got all the information. Obviously, we're on every day, 97.1 FM, the big talker, throughout most of northern Arizona. You can also stream the show. So we have the streaming link up there. So every day at 4:06, you can click on the stream if you want. Tons of people listening that way. Appreciate that. But if you've missed anything, or if you want to go back and say, hey, what did he say? Or did he really say that? Or let me catch that again. I didn't quite understand that. Sometimes I say something and I don't understand it too, but you know how it is. But anyway, you go to talkwithjeff.com, click on how to listen, and we have the bigger places that we have the podcast on now, including Spotify, iTunes, Podbean, and Amazon Music. There's also a link to YouTube. Some of our stuff goes up on YouTube. YouTube gets a little annoying sometimes, but we got it up there. So go check it out. And please, if you subscribe to the podcast, please rate it. Please do the little star, the little checkbox or whatever. It helps us grow the podcast. Plus, of course, subscribe, rate it, and then share it if you could. Go to talkwithjeff.com, talkwithjeff.com. Click on how to listen. Let's get back to the show. All right, folks, welcome back. Jeff Horvitz here. Send me an email, talkwithjeff@icloud.com, plus the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. Love to hear from you. Bruce Siblinger coming up here in just a minute, so stick around for that. I want to hit on this first. I've been reading quite a few articles on what is a declining sperm count among men in Western cultures, North America, Japan, Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And you can check it out. You can Google sperm count. I don't know if you want to do that. You might find things you might not want to see. I don't know. But anyway, there is continued studies that's being done that's saying the sperm count's going down. I'm looking at one from Scientific American here. When did this one come out? Let's see. Reproductive problems in both men and women are rising at an alarming rate. This came out actually recently, March 16th, 2021. And they're saying that the sperm count in particular fertility rate has dropped worldwide by nearly 1% per year since 1960. Sperm count, I read another article, is 50, 60% down. So a real big problem. And I'm tying this back to what I opened up with today, which is these politicians that want to push for $2,000 a month until every emergency ends and everybody's happy and unicorns are floating around or whatever. And I'm thinking about all of this stuff we're doing. Now talks of a $3 or $4 trillion infrastructure plan, as well as possibly we're hearing more talks of another stimulus package. The other one, the ink's barely dry. They're talking about doing more. Anyway, $30 trillion in debt, hundreds of trillions, if at least, of obligations. And you think about this, that requires a lot of future workers because there's a lot more people. People are living longer. And they require stuff from the system. They're used to getting their checks. And we're getting whole new generations used to getting checks now from the government or digital transfers or whatever you want to call them. So how are you responsible of us to put this on future generations? And we're putting all this burden on future generations. Less and less workers are going to have to carry the load. So I think there's going to be a real animosity between people. Those who are collecting, those who are in the system, and those who have to work. And Bruce Sidlinger, he actually gave a really good example. He has kind of this manifesto that I want to get into where he's talking about, hey, what about the plumber? What if the plumber decides not to stop? What if the plumber decides just to stop working and doesn't come fix the toilet? That'd be, get pretty bad pretty quick. So we're going to get into that. And this issue with the teachers, these teachers in San Diego that go help the kids here illegally, but they won't go back to work. What the heck's going on here? So, yeah, I wanted to welcome Bruce Sidlinger back to the program and this animosity that I think is developing, Bruce. And what do we do here as far as if people just decide not to work? You're proposing something that's maybe a little more radical. It's kind of up the Atlas Shrugged avenue, I guess you'd say, where we're on strike, if you ever read that book. But, Bruce, I guess the question is, when is enough enough? When do people like the plumbers or the people delivering the food say, hey, I'm not delivering to you anymore while you sit around? I don't think we're there yet. It's pretty extreme, but when is enough enough?
Well, right. And, you know, I try to see the extreme side. I'm probably your only guest that spends as much time on MSNBC as on Fox News. And I question myself. I question whether all of the new thinking might be correct. But my concerns stand regardless. My concerns stand regardless. It's what, regardless of whether it's right or wrong, regardless of whether things need to be repaired or not. Mm-hmm. What if the people that make everything work decide they've had enough? And would that be legal? I mean, you know, the thing that constrains,
they go on strike. You're saying they say I'm not going to go.
Right. Yeah. The thing that constrains the right and keeps them working. I mean, I'm just going to say, I'll say the tradesmen that I'm guessing are right-leaning, right? This isn't science. This is just my guess. But the thing that would keep right-leaning tradesmen working are as follows. First of all, they're assiduously law-abiding because that's part of that ethic that I was raised with. And I consider myself kind of blue-collar in that way. They're assiduously law-abiding. They have a work ethic, and it's really hard to quit working, right? Like, mm-hmm. I wake up and work whether somebody's paying me or not, and whether I like the person I'm working for or not, I must work, right? And also, they're averse to debt, and they're averse to asking for favors. And so these are the things that keep the plumber doing horrible work and maybe exposing themselves to COVID all through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. When other people are saying, hey, if there's the slightest risk, I obviously have to stay at home and get checks from the government.
Yeah, I'm not
right?
going to go. Well, let me back up to the plumber. It's a perfect example because here's someone that you're calling because maybe your toilet's clogged up or whatever. There's a bathroom leak and you're calling them in the middle of a pandemic and you're saying, and there may be someone who has refused to go back to work because they're so quote unquote concerned about COVID. They don't want to expose themselves mm-hmm. or the family, but your toilet backs up. So you call up Jeff's plumbing or Bruce's plumbing and say, hey, I need you to come over here. My toilet's backed up. This is essential. So the plumber comes over and they come into your house. They don't know if you've got COVID or not or whatever. And they go into the most, how should I say this? Intimate room. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yes.
The most possibly exposed room in the house.
Hopefully they've never looked at a bathroom with a black light because they'll never think the same.
Yeah. No, you don't think about that when you do plumbing. Well, I worked with my stepdad for several years in the plumbing. He was a plumber. I learned enough to just get by, but you don't want to know. Yeah. But you go into the most potentially exposed room to unclog that person's toilet who refuses to go back to work because they might get exposed to COVID.
Well, and just to continue that scenario, right? Let's say this is the stereotypical plumber, white, straight, male, right wing, Christian plumber or whatever, and they're sitting there. And then
that's making a lot of assumptions there, Bruce. But go ahead.
Well, right, it's a stereotype. I said
okay.
It's a stereotype.
Okay.
I grew up in Texas. I never met a plumber that didn't fit that criteria
okay.
in Texas. But
I have. But go ahead.
Although I'll tell you what, my dream girl would be a plumber. Because there's nothing better to have in a wife than plumbing skills, right? I mean, yeah. That's more important than makeup skills, right? Yeah. But anyway, so it's not that I want the plumber to be that person I just described, but let's say they're that person I just described, and then in the background, MSNBC is on, and there's some studies and arts majors. The kids are running around, and they're talking about needing debt cancellation or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And you see a $5,000 coffee maker there, but you're gonna resist paying the plumber's bill. You're gonna question like some little item on the bill.
Yeah, right? Why'd you charge me $5 for this? Yeah,
yeah. And so you know, how long does that go on? And so I had this legitimate question about would it be legal? Obviously, you know, a lot of jobs, you're almost an indentured servant. Like, you're not allowed to strike if you're a policeman, for example.
True, but, public jobs.
Okay. But I've got a couple of questions, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't know. These are actual questions. What if a plumber, obviously you could just quit working. I mean, you can retire, well, exactly, right? Or you can take sabbatical. But what if a plumber says, you know what, I'm just not going to work on, I'm just not going to work on this house because I know that it's a education professor at NAU, and I've seen those textbooks that Bruce had to read, and I'm not going to fix their plumbing. Is that legal? I mean,
I'm not an attorney, but I do.
You're not a protected class. Well,
yeah, exactly. I was just going to say I do real estate, so I've taken the realtor courses, and there are protected classes. I don't think a professor, for the sake of being professor, is a protected class, but there could be other elements within that make that person a protected class. I wouldn't want to speculate.
Let me ask you another question. Maybe maybe someday you can get a civil rights lawyer on, and you can
say,
"Hey, Bruce brought up these wacky scenarios. What if a plumber said 500? What if the plumber raised all the prices 500%, and then they said 500% discount? You know, not 500% discount, because that would be. But what if they?
I'm going to pay
what
you.
If they said 80, what if they said 80% discount? After they raise their prices, but they said 80% discount if you show your Republican voter registration.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I don't know if any of that.
I mean, I don't think there's a protected class. Now, of course, there would be a protected class in a hurry. But like right now, I'm just wondering because it worries me. You know, I want the country to work.
Yeah.
I mean, I posted this the other day. I said, man, I sure hope President Biden and his team like run the country well, because you know this is my country and my president, and I want success, right? And so I don't want everything to break, but I'm worried there's a breaking point.
I am too, but let's do this. We got to carry this over to the next hour, Bruce. You bring up some fascinating points. I want to hit on this some more, because I have some numbers for you too. I want to switch over to a little bit of the rent moratorium, the eviction moratorium.
Oh yeah,
All ties in. But no, it's a great topic, because it's what are you willing to continue to work when others don't? Bruce, stick around, folks. Fox News coming up, then we'll be back right at 5:06. Hang tight, don't go anywhere. Back in a minute.
This is the Jeff Horowitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All right, continuing on, we got Bruce Sidlinger, plus some of your emails, plus some news updates. Another hour of the show starts now. All right, welcome back. Your comments are always welcome. Go ahead and chime in on the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. Don't forget tomorrow's open line Wednesday, 2 full hours of your live listener calls and comments. And we're bringing in Rob Wilson. He's a firearms expert, Second Amendment expert. It's not the only topic, though. Open line Wednesday, we'll do whatever direction you want. So that's tomorrow. So tune in right at 4 or 6, and please participate. And in the meantime, send emails, talkwithjeff@icloud.com. talkwithjeff@icloud.com. And Bruce Sidlinger is a businessman, an investor, an educator. He works at his machine shop as well, pilot as well. And we were talking about some issues last hour regarding people that might just get frustrated and give up and not want to work. But Bruce, I want to hit on this real quick. Have you ever done geode hunting?
Yeah. Well, yeah, where you break them up with a hammer.
Yeah. I've got a lot of emails that have come in since my son Owen and I talked about his, we went on this little adventure a couple weeks ago during his birthday. He loves fossils and rocks and things like that. And people keep asking me about this place that's towards Payson. It's actually right after you go through Strawberry and then Pine, I believe, heading east towards Payson. It's called Geode Hill. So if you're wondering, because people are like, hey, how do I get there? I just Google mapped it, used Google Maps, and you type in Geode Hill in the Payson area. You look over in the Payson area, it'll show you how to get right there. I could give you directions on air here, but it'd probably be bad. But Bruce, these geodes are like just littered all over the ground as you walked around there, just in that little area. It's kind of weird how those things happen.
Well, they're there for another week, but now you blab it. Everybody's going to come up from Phoenix with their S wings.
You're
and
right.
It'll just be a bunch of broken rocks.
Yeah, I went there. It's just gravel. I ruined Geode Hill. This is what happened with Fossil Creek. Fossil Creek is off of 260 as you leave Camp Verde heading up the hill. It's a big hill there. Somebody wrote about this beautiful Fossil Creek 10, 15 years ago in some travel magazine, and now it's been flooded. Now you have to get a permit to go in there, which at first I was kind of opposed. This is kind of a weird thing with me. I was opposed to the government regulation of this and the permit system, but seeing that they really do regulate the amount of cars that can go in and you can actually go enjoy it, it's kind of a double-edged sword for me, Bruce. I appreciate not having 5,000 flip-floppers from Phoenix in this area that they were dehydrating in and getting in trouble and littering.
There's one way you can undo the damage you just did to Geode Hill, and that is to talk about all the mountain lions that you encountered.
Yeah, and jaguars.
Yeah.
We were talking about that on Friday. Yeah, I wouldn't go there. I hear there's mountain lion everywhere and jaguars and dragons.
Yeah.
I think that's how the geodes were formed, were by the dragons.
Yeah, they're dragon egg.
They're dragon. Oh, man. All right, Bruce, let's hit on this. I want to hit more on what you were talking about last hour as far as the kind of disincentive for some to work, but some people are staying home and kind of the animosity that can be brewing in this society. If enough people are just collecting a check, how do you convince the plumber to go out and work when somebody else can say, I can sit at home and make just as much? I think we're heading to that.
There's no unity of purpose, right? I mean, I made the remark on my Facebook a few weeks ago in some other context. I was explaining culture. I always like to define culture as the way we do things around here, right? And I was talking about different possible cultures. And I said, you know what? It's like some cultures are more right than others. But the critical thing is you have to have one. If you don't have a culture, it's just a bunch of people on an area of land and not liking each other, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like there are multiple valid cultures for America, but we need to have one. And what is that? 74 million. I hear that number, 74 million, which is, I think, what MSNBC considers the current number of deplorables in the United States. And if you've got 74 million people that the rest of the people don't like and vice versa, then you don't really have, and they're all in the same boat. That doesn't make for a happy cruise.
No. And you've got two different, very diverse mindsets in this country, I think, that are just, I don't know how you reconcile that, but look at this example. You said last hour, the plumber, for example, and I was talking about this push by some members of Congress, a growing number of members of Congress and of the House and the Senate and the population in general that thinks that people should get a universal basic income, that they should just get a certain amount of base money. I've heard of figures of like $2,000 per month. And then you add in all the unemployment, what'd they bump it to, 400 or something, or 300 additional unemployment, plus your states. Some states, Arizona's pretty low. It's like $200-something per week compared to other states, but some states are a lot higher. So you could be making a lot of money to stay at home. How do you get these folks back to work when it's, Bruce, it's much easier to, I know you like just going to work. You love what you do, and you don't consider it a job. You consider what, it's a passion, and then, you pursue that. But some people, Bruce, look, it's easier to stay home than to go and collect a check and to hang out and not have to get, you know, dressed up or whatever. And maybe you go to a job, though. A lot of people are going to jobs like a fast food place. Maybe they don't like that. So wouldn't you stay at home and to make the same amount or more money rather than go flip a burger?
I'll tell you what, I could get more and more used to it. The more I saw other people not working and getting money, so the more I might start to question my work ethic, right? Like, it's not a perfect analogy because the Morlocks had, but you remember the Morlocks, I've talked to them about before. There's a point where you say, wait a minute, do I want to be a Morlock toiling away underground and handing up, you know, food and money to the surface where the beautiful people are? I mean, there's a point where you start to worry that you're being made a fool of, right? And so, can I just mention one thing? You said universal basic income.
Yes.
And as much as you don't like universal basic income, there's something way worse, which is what we're going to get. But, you know, Andrew Yang, I think I told you I try to see all sides. I've mentioned Vonnegut and Player Piano and how he predicted that there would only be jobs for 2% of the people. And, you know, if we continue to make both children and robots, we're going to have too much of, you know, we're going to have too many workers and not everybody can work. And Andrew Yang, one of the things he was very consistent on with universal basic income was that it was universal. That first word was super important because it at least paid lip service to everybody being in the same boat. You know, Warren Buffett was going to get his $2,000 a month check.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening in the thing that really upset me, because I'm an equal protection person, regardless of which race I'm imagining myself being. And in Oakland and Marin County, it's universal. It's explicitly universal except for white people. Except for white straight people, because it actually said BIPOC on the mayor's website for who was eligible.
Well, which brings up all kinds of legal questions, and I've seen a lot of people questioning this, saying, is income specified to any particular group, race, gender, whatever? Is that legal? Is that constitutional? I think that's going to have to play out in the courts over time, because you are saying, you are excluding and including people. And that's one of the worst scenarios I think we've gotten into, is government kind of picking those winners and losers, picking who gets what. And then they justify. You can justify anything, I guess.
It's always been bad, although up until now, it was at least something you could optimize for. Like, mm-hmm. if the government said, we want to discourage this behavior, then and they provided tax incentives, then you could reoptimize your life, right? To avoid the discouraged behavior.
The loopholes available. The incentives available to everyone who understands it and takes advantage of it, I guess.
Right, but but how do you reorganize your life to become a BIPOC when you're not, right? I mean, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
The mayor took that off the website, but a lot of people have screenshots, and it was just shocking. I mean, I took a screenshot because it was shocking.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It's removed, though, you're saying, because it probably that legality has come up. Is this legal? Is this constitutional?
Yeah. And you know, some people would probably say, well, it's not government money, it's the philanthropist money, but the whole point of the philanthropists admit out loud that they're seeding the project, hoping it will catch on and switch to public funding.
Yeah, that's what they always
So it's dispensed. It's dispensed by the government. The mayor picks the winners and losers, but the seed money comes from philanthropists. So they might temporarily escape some kind of equal protection challenge, but not when it becomes public.
Mm-hmm.
Not when it becomes public money. But you said, is it constitutional? I guess what I would tell you is that if you have what's constitutional is defined by whoever controls the White House, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the Supreme Court. That's what's constitutional.
Yeah, the Constitution is a piece of paper at this point, which they're largely ignoring.
Everything's expediency.
Exactly. And you can do something like many of the lockdowns and shutdowns that happened and all this stuff that's happened, all the selective nature, anything government does, they can do it for a long time. Look at this battle that's happening between two mayors in Arizona, Tucson and Flagstaff now, and against the governor's executive orders saying that they can't do mask mandates essentially anymore. So who knows which side is right? It may take a long time to litigate, but
it's whoever can shout the longest, shout the loudest and the longest.
But look at it on the private sector side, look at how long, look at the eviction moratorium, for example, or when bars were ordered closed, there was plenty of lawsuits launched. Some of them have gone through some sort of process, but many are still hanging in the balance. Who has deeper pockets, the government or your business?
Remember that if the business sues government, the business is paying for the lawyers on both sides.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, because they're the ones, where does the money come from for the government to have endless pockets to pay for the attorneys? It's kind of sad if you think about it.
Our grandparents told us all this stuff. One of the first things I remember hearing my grandfather say was, you can't fight City Hall.
Yeah.
That's always been true.
Grandma and grandpa's advice is always good, even down to washing your hands and, and living a sanitary life. Okay, Bruce, let me ask you this. Where, with all this resentment, I feel that this is really just growing. Where does this end? Does it get to a point, because we kind of started off with, you were proposing that maybe some businesses just go on strike, kind of like the Atlas Shrugged type thing. Does it get to that point where businesses are just like, I'm done. I'm paying for the system. Half the people aren't paying taxes. Maybe that number will even grow. I go to work and then I got to pay more, a higher percentage of my income to taxes. Meanwhile, I'm going and servicing people who aren't even working. Where does it end? Or does the government step in, kind of like an Atlas Shrugged scenario, where they say, okay, we dictate now that you cannot not go to work, but unless you are already not working, and then you can, of course, stay home. But Bruce, the plumber, you have to go to work because it's for the betterment of society.
Well,
we're
all
in this together.
So, you know, I have too much self-doubt as a centrist libertarian to be a very good activist. Although I'll tell you what, if I was going to be an activist, I would say only do what's legal. It would be assiduously legal activism. I would say don't do anything that's not legal. I think that there's probably some value. And again, I'm not suggesting this because it might. You know, I don't have all the answers. Unlike most people, I don't have all the answers. Unlike everybody that's shouting, right? And I don't know if this would make things worse or better. But let's just imagine that that the plumbers quit unclogging drains, right? Let's just imagine that. And I used to tell my high school kids, they would ask me about advice about a major, and I would say, well, if you're going to pick a major and you're open minded about what to do, just stop and think about which professions the world would miss if they disappeared. If all of the dancers went on strike, would we have an immediate national crisis that nobody was dancing, right? Mm-hmm. But if all the plumbers quit doing plumbing, that's an immediate national crisis, right? I mean, that shuts down hospitals, right? People, that's terrible. And of course, I absolutely don't want plumbers to quit plumbing for hospitals, because I'm most of all nonviolent, and not, you know, failing to unclog a hospital's drain is violence, right? But if it happened right away, if that were to happen soon, maybe it's the one way to kind of shake people up back into reality, because what would happen is one of two things would happen, right? Either the left, I hate to even use these terms, but I'd say either the left would say, you know what? We need plumbing. Maybe we should dial it down a little bit. Or the other thing would happen is the left would say, you know what? We need plumbing. And we need to send troops to all the plumbers' houses with guns and march them off to the people's homes that have clogged drains. And, you know, at least you get to the truth.
Yeah, of right. What's going. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good point, and I don't think it'll ever get there. But it's if you explain it that way and say, and I do this with the eviction moratorium. I ask the bureaucrats in cubicle heaven, or even the tenant that may be taking advantage of this eviction moratorium. Maybe some need it, but look, we're long enough in this thing where people should be figuring out how to maneuver in this quote unquote new world we're in. You should be figuring this stuff out now. You can't continue this forever. But the question comes up, do you work for free? And I'd like to ask that question of maybe people who are taking for granted things like the eviction moratorium or the check just showing up or whatever. Do you work for free? How do you feel about someone else paying for all of this stuff? And I guess the answer is a lot of people just don't care anymore. They maybe they just think it's free magic money. I don't know, Bruce.
Well,
I don't know.
When I very first heard the idea of an eviction moratorium proposed a year ago, I immediately responded. I don't think I was on your show. It was probably just on my Facebook. But I said, I try to respond with ridiculous arguments, right? And so I said, this is a great idea. And also Safeway, you shouldn't have to pay for food at Safeway.
No, should get food.
Because what's the difference, yeah. Right? Safeway, actually, food is even more immediately necessary than housing, right? On the hierarchy of needs,
yeah.
Right?
You
need
water,
air,
food,
you need water,
air, yeah.
And you need food. You need food before you need housing, especially if it's summer. Now, if it's winter in Flagstaff, maybe you need the housing worse. But so why didn't the government tell Safeway, hey, you can still. I mean, here's how they should have done it. I'm making a ridiculous argument intentionally. They should have said, you still go through the checkout line. The cashier still shows you the amount to pay. But if you can't pay, then you just owe it to them.
Yeah, we'll pay you later. I know.
Well, I mean, how is that different?
How is it different on every level, including the plumber, including the plumber that comes to your house? They unclogged your toilet.
And here's my point about why it might be good to bring something to a head right away rather than slowly, is when you do stuff slowly, it's like the frog in the boiling water, right? The slow boil and the frog doesn't notice. Well, if you told Safeway to give away free food, and we've already seen grocery stores react to the minimum wage in California of all places, they'll just say, no problem, we're closing the store next week. Boom, right? There's quite a few grocery stores that have been closed in California because they just said, hey, we were barely profitable to begin with. There's no way. It's not the minimum wage. California, a couple of cities in the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, too, I think, passed a hero laws mandating that grocery store workers get an extra $4 or $5 an hour. Well, the grocery stores just closed. I mean, they said, hey, let's bring this to a head right away. And they immediately closed. And boy, was it quick. I'm talking about like within a week. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is the problem with the eviction moratorium is people don't see the effects right away, because what's going to happen is people like you and I are never going to do additional residential housing. We're not going to add to the residential housing stock ever again, ever, ever, never, ever, ever. Right. That's one thing I
they've
can guarantee.
They've taken the confidence
you.
Out, Bruce. They've taken the confidence in that investment out.
I can guarantee you that people like me are never going to provide housing again, but that is so abstract, right? Because it's so slow. Right. And if it's slow, then the other side will never admit that they were wrong.
No.
But if you passed a law and the very next day there was no plumbing in the entire United States, then you have to admit you're wrong. You have to back off. And you see that you see that politicians do back off if they get pushback. Like the perfect example is it Buttigieg that said, the mileage?
Yeah. You're going to pay per mile. For driving.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that proposal lasted about 2 days. And then, of course, people pointed out it was regressive.
Yeah.
I'm glad it went away, although I'm glad it went away for a different reason, which is that the way you implement a mileage tax is with smart tags, what are called it's these GPS cellular license plates. They've been available in California optionally for years. And so it's just like the vaccine. It's just like the vaccine passport. There's a side effect to these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of silly to imagine we have any privacy left, but the tiny little, shred of privacy
getting
you
in
have
your
left.
Car, yeah.
Yeah. And so,
track per mile. All right, Bruce, look, here's the bottom line. I get where you're saying now. If the plumbers all of a sudden tomorrow did what, you don't have to pay your plumber. If the government did a don't pay your plumber, mandate, we would see that fall apart really quick because the impacts would be immediate. I think it's a perfect example. Bruce.
There would be zero plumbing.
Yeah, Bruce, it's interesting topic, interesting concept. I don't think it's going to happen, but maybe we'll find out tomorrow if toilets start backing up. Appreciate the time, Bruce. We'll talk with you real soon.
It's always a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
All right, folks, and if you've got comments, love to hear from you. Chime in, talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hang tight, more to come. Back in a minute. Folks, welcome back. Comments, you can email talkwithjeff@icloud.com. You can also chime in on the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. I'm going to get to a comment here from Holbrook in just a second. Kind of reminds me of 2008 here. I don't know. History, they say history repeats itself, but really history just rhymes. I think that's a little more appropriate. But I'm looking at this issue, and I'm going to try to explain this. I don't know a lot about this derivative, this trading mechanism. I'm looking at institutionalinvestor.com, Archegos. That's the fund that some of you may have heard about, but this really got brushed aside. Not many people have been talking about this issue. But according to several news sources, this fund, Archegos, it's a little tough name to pronounce, at a fund that was worth about $10 billion, maybe $15 billion, something like that, by Bill Wang is the name, if I'm pronouncing that correct. That was Friday. So what is it, Tuesday? One, two, three, four days ago or so. Friday was maybe $10 billion, maybe 15, we're not sure. It's now worth like nothing. It's gone. It's the guy got wiped out. But what's interesting about this is he used some kind of exotic derivative. Now, remember back in 2008, we hadn't heard of things like collateralized debt obligations, things like that. And if you want to kind of see an explanation of that in a 2008 financial crisis, if you want to do it in 2 hours, you can watch, I guess, The Big Short. You can read that book by The Big Short. Actually, it's on my shelf over here by Michael Lewis. And it explains all these exotic trading derivatives that we really didn't even know anything about until everything imploded. Well, this, and this is from Bloomberg, this guy Wang with Archegos Capital Management, he used the banks to get leverage to buy these instruments called contracts for difference. I never heard of it until yesterday when I was doing some research on this. So these contracts of difference, I guess, basically allow you to buy, it's a contract to buy a bunch of stocks, for example. Or I've seen it, I think it's being done on Bitcoin, it's being done on commodities, it can be done on really anything. So whoever owns the stock, the XYZ stock, could create this contract, and that's what they did here with this Archegos Capital Management. Could also short it in the same way. It's I guess, similar to, I'm saying this loosely, options. And I don't even know if you know about all that. But anyway, it's an instrument. It's a derivative. But it allows you to get to have the ability to get a bunch of stock, but you're not really getting that stock because it's just a contract to get the stock. But what was happening, apparently, in Wang's case, this fund that was worth $10 billion or $15 billion or something, is they were highly levered up. Highly levered up. And apparently, you can lever up like 5-10 times on this stuff. So his, let's say, $10 billion was really $50 billion, maybe $100 billion, but they're not exactly sure. So they borrowed the money to do this, to do these exotic contracts for difference, from Nomura Holdings, which is a Japanese bank, and Credit Suisse. So it all went up in smoke because the stock went the wrong direction from what he predicted. The contract, the banks called, so he had to liquefy other funds and blah, 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 it's all due. But anyway, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world, but it makes you wonder how many of these exotic type of contracts and derivatives are out there now in 2021 like they were in 2008. And one more thing on this highly unregulated market, that these contracts for difference. And usually when a company takes a stake of more than 5% in U.S. listed stocks, they have to disclose that. Not with these contracts. So my point being here, I'm mentioning this because you never know what's out there and what could be that black swan that could trigger something like we saw maybe in 2008 or worse. You wonder how many of these derivatives and how much of this junk they have out there. All right, let's do this. I'd love to get to a couple of comments if I can find this one. Chime in. The Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. This is Bob from Holbrook.
I was in Flagstaff last week. Why is everybody in Flagstaff still wearing masks when the governor said it's no longer required? Does Flagstaff follow a different set of rules? I'm just wondering. Hey, thank you for your time, buddy. Top, top. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, Flagstaff does follow its own set of rules. They like to be different, obviously. Yeah, if you come from a place like Holbrook or Camp Verde and you go to Flagstaff, it's loosening up a little bit. I see a lot more people not wearing masks in stores and different places out there. But, you know, a month ago, if you'd come, you'd be like, oh, my, I've landed on another planet. No, I discussed this a bit yesterday and a bit earlier in the program. The mayor of Flagstaff, Mayor Paul Deasy, who did text me, by the way, and is asking to come on the show this Friday. So we have to set a time up still, but it looks like we'll get the mayor of Flagstaff later in the week. And the mayor of Tucson have decided that they want to oppose Governor Ducey's loosening of the restrictions. Their interpretation is they still have the authority to do this, which I don't know. And we answered an email earlier in the program. If you missed that, catch the podcast at talkwithjeff.com. The listener was talking about home rule, and she said, hey, I did the research, and it seems like Flagstaff does have the right to say we're still going to have a mask mandate. What Flagstaff's doing, Bob, is the mayor says we're keeping a mandate in force despite what the governor said. Tucson said the same thing. They say their legal folks say that's okay. They're allowed to do it. I don't know on this issue. I don't think they do, because think about it. The previous mayor of Flagstaff, Mayor Coral Evans, she didn't do a mask mandate back in June when she was still in office, but she wanted to. And as soon as the governor said, I will allow cities to do it if they want, she did it the next day. So apparently she didn't think she had that authority, because she always referenced to Governor Ducey that he says she couldn't do a mask mandate, so she didn't. Now this new mayor, Mayor Paul Deasy, he seems to think he can. So I don't know. Before we run out of time, I want to hit on this. How long can this be sustained? This is from CNBC. They're saying that around 20% of adult renters said they didn't pay last month's rent, according to a survey published in March by the Census Bureau. Closer to 33% of black renters reported the same. That's from CNBC. June 30th, as you know, will the eviction moratoriums being extended to. That'll be well over a year that this has been in place. And I asked this question, how can anyone think that this is going to be sustained in the long run? And I'm looking at these numbers. This is also from that CNBC article about states and, what is this, renter households unable to pay rent and at risk of eviction as a share of total renter households. So these are the folks, the percentage of renters. These are staggering numbers that I'm looking at. I need to cover this more tomorrow because we're going to run out of time. But places like Alaska, 37% are facing eviction. Maine, 35%. See if I can find Arizona on this list. California, 37%. Kansas, 34%. Oklahoma, 42%. Michigan, 40%. Anyway, I can pick any. It's between 30 and 40% of renting households unable to pay rent as a percentage of the total households that rent. That's staggering numbers. If those numbers are true, I can't even fathom that. That just sounds like how are they going to stop this eviction moratorium coming up in June with those kind of numbers? Something's got to be done, and I don't know what it is. All right, folks, that's it for today. Don't forget to go to talkwithjeff.com. We got a new link up there. How to listen. Click on that. How to listen. And I'm going there right now so I can make sure I tell you the right thing. how to listen, and you click on that, and that has all of the podcast options for you, plus the streaming information. So for tomorrow's show, you're going to want to stream, because we're going to have Open Line Wednesday, 2 full hours of your live listener comments starting right at 4:06 with Rob Wilson from Timberline Firearms and Training. Have a good night. See you tomorrow.